Billy, I'm an alcoholic. If there does happen to be anyone here who's not a member of AA, but is here, happens, just wants to get information about AA, obviously I will not say my last name and would appreciate if no full face pictures are taken. That's only out of respect to AA's traditions. My sobriety date is January the 5th, 1990. My home group is a Tell It Like It Is group in Palm Beach Gardens. We meet on Fridays and Mondays at 9 a.m. You know, and I'm probably going to break this talk down into three parts. You know, home group as a member, home group as a group, and then home group as a member, your responsibilities for your own home group. The reason I say that is because I'll just start off in general information, is that I could possibly say some things that you're not going to agree with, and I'm okay with that. It's just the way it goes. I definitely know that while I have complete 100% respect for the outside entities and agencies that cooperate and work with Alcoholics Anonymous, that sometimes I have a very different view of alcoholism or AA than they do. And I don't, again, I'm okay with that as well. In fact, today at 4 o'clock, I'm going to be driving home, somebody that's very involved with drug courts in America, and their annual gathering, wants to talk to me for a while about some questions, and where that conversation comes from. I'll just, you know, fill you in on, so, because it might help to set the table for today, is that there is a chief probation officer in America who has kind of changed her view of cooperating with AA, because she realized that she was just listening to the people before her who told her what to do with maybe clients she had that were alcoholic. And what she was told to do is just give them a form that had a lot of spaces on it, like 30 meetings on it, spaces to fill out what day it was, what time it was, the name of the meeting you went to, and have someone sign it. And what she realized after working in veterans courts, DWI-related courts, things like that, is she realized that meeting attendance has nothing to do with AA membership, the number of meetings that you go to. She realized that people coming back to her and simply giving her a form that said they went to 50 meetings. Now, I came to AA as a teenager. I'm always in awe of people who ask other people to sign those forms, because I always signed them myself. So I have it blows me away that there are some people who have that level of honesty early on. But the reason she tells this story is that after working there for a couple of years and going to as many open meetings as she could, and then becoming friends with active members of Alcoholics Anonymous who were sponsors and sponsored and sponsoring people, she realized that she didn't need those forms anymore. She only needed one piece of paper for everybody that came back to check in with her at her courtroom, if they were an alcoholic and going to AA. She needed to know their name, their sobriety date, the name of their home group, if they had a sponsor, service commitment at their home group, and the step they were currently working. That information allowed her a much better picture of them as their activity in AA than some random list of 50 meetings they went to. Because with those questions on that form, she could easily have a 5 or 10 minute conversation with somebody in her courtroom and know whether they were in AA or around AA. And that's what this lady today wants to talk to me about a national presentation that's going on, because home group membership maybe went out of style at one point in Alcoholics Anonymous. we became so obsessed with starting new meetings and new groups. And probably the worst statement in AA is a resentment in a coffee pot. It's created. I mean, when people ask, why would we have a communication problem in Alcoholics Anonymous today? Well, it's very simple. We have way, way too many groups and meetings. And maybe after COVID, you know, it breaks my heart that some haven't come back. But if you did the simple math, I'll just do the simple math for you from where my home group sits. If you're the GSR of my home group and you go to the quarterlies and you stay over for one night, just Saturday night, and you need gas money to go there or come back. And I'm not even going to go into the fact if you have a job on Monday morning and you have to be home by 8 o'clock at night. I'm just going into the math around what it costs for a group to have a GSR. But for my group, we estimate it's $1,200 a year. That's what it costs my group. It costs us about $300 a quarterly between one night a hotel, gas, and maybe food. And what I know in the 93 areas that are currently in the United States and Canada is we do a very poor job of telling new groups, hey, if you want to be connected to Alcoholics Anonymous, this is the cost above your rent, above maybe if you get an anniversary cake each month, above if you buy chips and hand them out for newcomers. Above, and then that $1,200 doesn't even count going to a regional forum, which is every 2 years when the General Service Office comes around and puts on like a dog and pony show of almost bringing the General Service Office to your region. That's easily another $300, and that's on the low end. Now we're up to $1,500. And in years, there's not a forum. There's the Southern States AA Service Assembly, which this year is in Orlando. But so there's one of those events each year. So it's really $1,500 a year, $1,600 a year for my group to have a GSR. Well, I'll tell you right now, and I know I'm a math person in my professional life, but if you counted up all the registered groups in Area 15, there's not enough $1,500 to send every GSR to that quarterly. There simply is not. Like we have kept, I always tell people, just talk to someone in AA who's been divorced. I mean, it's just math. Now you need two houses. And you shop for food in two different places. And you're just dividing. And the AA economy is only so big. And we're supposed to be self-supporting. That's what we're supposed to be. So I say that because I don't know who here does CPC work or treatment work or anything else. But sometimes I find that we don't focus when working with professionals about the importance of a home group. We're so busy about telling new people to just go to meetings all day, 24 hours a day, which is great advice, but we forget sometimes to tell them about the importance of a home group. And, you know, home groups are so important from a recovery point of view, and then important from, obviously, a fellowship point of view that I'm not going to pull out a service manual. I don't want it. It's like drinking for me, the service manual. But, you know, I have been a teenager in AA. I got sober in my early 20s. I've been a member of a correctional facility home group. I know what it's like to be an AA member with no money. And when I say no money, I mean zero, like no money. I know what it's like to barely get by. I know what it's like to have a career. And I've, you know, served in certain positions, which have, you know, I just share with you, not because everyone needs to do it, not because it makes me great. I just share with you because my experience is my view of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I am a career professional, which I'm hoping I maybe have a year left and I'm just calling it quits. But what does that mean? That means I grew up in a different world, even though I love old school AA. Because remember, I came to AA in the early 80s. In the early 80s, most of the people, the men and women that you meant were with 20 and 30 years. That means they came in the 50s and the 60s. That means they were direct descendants of our early founders. And I don't mean just Bill and Bob. I mean the early people who started AA in those communities. That's who they were. I was so young that even today it drives me crazy because I didn't really pay attention to their age. So now if I run into some of those people, I can't believe how old they are. I didn't. Back then to me, if you were 40, you were like 90 years old, right? But my view of AA is that of someone who became a professional after I got sober, which means even long before the pandemic, I grew up in more of a global world. I didn't grow up in a world where you worked for the same company for 40 years and you never moved and you retired there, or maybe, you know, depending on certain backgrounds. I was talking to someone who comes from where I come from. Kind of funny, like where I grew up, if you retired down to Florida, it would depend on what nationality and religion you were, where you stopped on 95, or whether you turned right and went across Alligator Alley to Naples. But I've lived in a couple of different places in my executive career. I have. So I have that view. I've always had a home group, but I've lived in a couple of different places. I've served as an alternate GSR at GSR at DCM. I've served as a delegate to the General Service Conference. I've served on a couple of corrections committees. I've served as a director on the AA World Services Board, and I've served as a Class B trustee at the General Service Board level. And I've served as the chair of the AA World Services Board. So I've traveled all around for AA. I've been to 87 out of the 93 different quarterlies or assemblies at least once. I've been to many correctional facilities, both where I lived and in other places. So I'm just giving you, that's my view of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not the view of, so my view is not about where I live now or where I used to live. It's way more 100,000 feet of what's happening in AA all over. And so as a home group member, you know, I'm a big Tom I fan. If you never heard of Tom I, but you can get his tapes anywhere. But, you know, I went to Tom I's funeral earlier this year, late last year, actually. And, you know, Tom I, still the first convicted felon, only convicted felon that we know of, who was the warden of a maximum custody penitentiary. You know, we've found convicted felon lawyers, convicted felon cops, convicted felon drug counselors, convicted felon out, but we still can't find another convicted felon warden of a maximum custody penitentiary. And, you know, for me, being at that funeral, it was kind of interesting to observe that here is a man who spent 7 years in Jackson State Prison in Michigan. And at his funeral, here is the corrections honor guard for the Corrections Department of North Carolina, who is at the door playing taps and then walking into his wife and somebody getting down on a knee and giving his wife a flag for his service to the North Carolina Department of Corrections. In the world that most people live in, that's not possible. It's an impossibility. In fact, a big reason why I believe in God, that I have witnessed miracles in Alcoholics Anonymous. But I bring Tom up because if you got to know Tom, he spent years not only being an inmate, but years working in the correctional system, years cooperating with Alcoholics Anonymous. His view of AA and correctional facilities is sometimes very different than some of the new age AA in correctional facilities. You know, I was taught that the number one reason to have AA in correctional facilities, because if you believe in what it says in the book, someone could possibly stay sober in there without a group. The book says you could stay sober in a foxhole in the middle of a war. You could stay sober on a polar ice cap. Before there was Zoom and everything like this, you could stay sober as a missionary. You could stay sober as a Peace Corps volunteer in the middle of nowhere. But the reason for groups and correctional facilities was to make members of Alcoholics Anonymous in that correctional facility as familiar with AA and what it would be like on the outside, so that when they left, there would really be nothing different except the seat in a different room. That the group would essentially be the same. The group would have a chairperson or a secretary. The group might even have a treasurer. The group might even have a GSR in a correctional facility. The group would be a big book meeting or a step meeting or an open discussion meeting or a speaker meeting. That the group would not be dominated by the correctional volunteers who bring the meetings in. They would not be the speakers every week. That we would allow the members of Alcoholics Anonymous who lived in that correctional facility to be the group conscience of that group. That's how important the home group is. And probably some things that get, I'm not here to be the AA police by any bit at all, but there's a reason why groups are different. Groups are not supposed to be the same. They're not. In fact, that's something that I tell new people all the time, like, go to a lot of groups and find the group that you think is for you. Tradition 4 gives a wide latitude for local customs. I mean, I know some people. I sometimes think for people who got sober in other places who come to Florida who are 30 and 40 years sober, I sometimes think we need like an introduction to giving out chips because it drives them so crazy, you know, sometimes. Like, wait a minute, every meeting we do this for all this time and everybody has made up new sayings for each different color and it's a local custom. And, you know, Tradition 4 is clear that we have a wide latitude with our individual groups. What kind of group they are? Are they open or closed? Big book, step meeting, speaker. We have Earl Grey tea. Do we have English breakfast? Do we have coffee? Do we bring donuts every week? You know, we have all kinds of local customs. But Tradition 4 does not give you latitude to say one of the other traditions is optional. It's not a veto for one of the other 11 traditions. All 12 traditions come in a package. Once you deviate from one, doesn't matter. It's not a report card. You know, like, it's not like me growing up where my mother could say, you got this, this, and this, and you got horrible grades. And I'm the kind of kid who likes to say, yeah, but I got a good grade here and a good grade there. The AA traditions are not like that. It's you follow 12 or you're following none of them. It's not a pass fail for the individual traditions. And that those local customs are awesome. And I would tell anyone else who moves, you know, don't come somewhere and tell everyone how they did it, where you came from. It's a bad introduction plan to Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, you might want to see how you could better fit in where you now live. That's a much better plan. But AA group membership was super important, super important. And we've had our challenges over the years. Remember that in the traditions came out in 1946. That's when the first one appears in the grapevine. And you have to remember what 1946 was like. In 1946, if you had 6 years, that's like somebody having 60 years today. Like, if you had 6 years, you were in charge. And I mean in charge. There was no group conscience. There was no newcomer has an equal say, just like anybody else. And when these traditions came out, and you can hear some of Bill's talks, especially as they digitize a lot of the old reel-to-reel, it's excellent. When the traditions were pushed back on, which they were hard, Bill would say that the one of the reasons for the pushback was so heavy was tradition two, that most of the groups could accept most of the other 11. What they could not accept is that all of a sudden, I'm not in charge with my 5 years, that every group member is equal and has a vote and a voice. And, you know, and then what happens in 19, you know, call it 48, 49, Bob's sick. Bill knows what the time frame for Bob probably is. Bill knows he won't live forever. But there's also a little known story, you know, because a lot of times we talk about Bill giving AA to the groups, right? Him and Bob giving AA to the groups. That's kind of partly a true story, but there's another part to that. Is a priest from St. Louis named Father Ed Dowling, who became very enamored with the steps, and he thought they reminded him very much of other things in his daily life. He took a train to New York to come meet this Bill W. guy. And he met him at the 23rd Street or the 22nd Street Clubhouse. And, you know, Father Ed Dowling became Bill W.'s spiritual advisor. And one of the things that he convinced Bill of was that he would never receive the freedom, the steps promised every other AA member, if every AA decision was his, if all of AA rested on his shoulders, if he was the final word on everything. And that led to the creation of the General Service Conference, which the traditions, which, you know, if you're a history geek, it was only like a week ago, would be the anniversary of the traditions being rolled out in Cleveland in 1950 at the first international convention. And also the plan there rolled out was that in 1951, for a test period until 1955, there would be this General Service Conference. And there would still be trustees, but the trustees would be responsible for the usual and ordinary business of our corporations. That was their job. That major AA policy decisions would be in the hands of the AA groups. And that as per concept one, you know, and I will just read one thing, because people, you know, question me sometimes, and I just go right to the first line of concept one, which says the AA groups today hold ultimate responsibility and final authority for all world services. There's two things that doesn't say that's very important. It says the members don't hold ultimate responsibility. Thank God. Knowing myself and my friends, yeah, much better off we don't have responsibility for AA's world services. And it doesn't say meetings. Meetings don't have responsibility for AA's world services. It says the groups. Even if you go to the front of the new manual, which has great new pictures and everything, which are awesome, when you go to the picture of the AA structure, there's nothing at the top that says members or meetings. Members or meetings have no input in the structure except for one way, the vote they carry at their home. That's it. One vote, one member, suggested one home group per person. Now, I know that this is hybrid, so I'll just get something out of the way before I start to thumb through this pamphlet, which, believe me, if I was ever king of AA for a day, this pamphlet would be sold with every big book. If I could have made any change while I was a trustee, if they said, Bill, you know, today you get one wish. I'd be like, give the AA group pamphlet out with every big book. Because it's that important. A lot of bad is left over from the pandemic. We now have people who introduce themselves and say, this is my Zoom home group. Well, no such thing. Some people say, oh, well, we don't use Zoom because it applies affiliation. So we now say, this is my online home group or this is an online meeting. That's still not a good description because we only have two kinds of meetings, open and closed. The type of technology used is no different than Sebastian Library. We have a meeting at Sebastian Library. We have a meeting at St. Joseph's Church. We have a meeting at the Oasis Clubhouse. Or we have a meeting on Zoom, a meeting on Skype. We only have one home group. It doesn't matter whether it's online or in person. We have one home group. We can go to as many meetings as we want, online or in person. But I will tell you that I got a call 3 weeks ago. I have been saying for years, there's a lot of people we've been missing by not using virtual technology. A lot of people who can't make it to meetings. It's a lot of people who can't make it to assemblies with valid reasons, very valid reasons, and we should be reaching them. But there's also a part of online that fits a lot of character defects of alcoholics. Like I got a call from somebody 3 weeks ago. I saw the area code. I picked it up. He said, oh, Billy, I met you at some workshop and I'm going to New York City. I want to go to the like unknown AA attractions in New York City. You know, the ones I know about GSO. And so he wanted to go to Bill's house at 182 Clinton. He wanted to go to the Grand Central Post Office where Box 459 really is. It's not just a name of a newspaper. He wanted to go to Calvary Church, where the Oxford group met with Bill, went to meetings. He wanted to go to 98th and Central Park West, where the building at Towns Hospital is today a condo, but it's still there. It looks just like it does back then. And so I shared them with him and told him how to get to them and where they are. And he said, oh, I don't live too far from you now. He said, I live in Palm Beach Gardens now. I said, oh, I said, what's your home group? He said, well, I go online now. And he said, what's yours? I said, oh, it's Tell It Like It Is, 9 a.m. And he goes, oh, I used to go to that group too. He said, I've just found online so convenient. And, you know, what goes through my head is that, you know, how many, you know, years of experience. And I still am online a decent amount. I go to a lot of in-person AA meetings in my home group, but I can tell you what I've noticed, my experience different from the pandemic today. During the pandemic, everybody was online. Today, I see a lot of online meetings of people with time who are talking to other people with time that have almost become like group therapy, who's the most sober. When there's a lot of years of experience that we need on the front lines of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I'm old school. I'm talking about the people that come to a home group who are alcoholic as described by the big book. Not who have alcohol use disorder, not who are heavy drinkers, but are diehard alcoholics. Because the point in the big book is that you can get off the elevator anytime you want. You don't have to reach a new bottom to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. But that doesn't change your level of involvement. Like, it doesn't matter if you were able to get off the bus a little earlier before you completely bottomed out. You still have to grasp AA like you're dying, waiting for a helicopter to drop you a life preserver, drowning in the middle of the ocean, or living on Skid Row, or homeless. We don't have a phased program for the degrees of alcoholism you suffer from. We only have a program for being a real alcoholic as described in the big book. So You know, as you look at the A group pamphlet, and I'm going to just throw out some of my favorite parts. You know, is there a difference between a meeting and a group? It's maybe my one of my favorite parts. The one I have is on page 13, 12. I don't know if it's the one you have. Yeah. Okay. Most AA, it says most AA members meet in AA groups as defined by the long form of our third tradition. However, some AA members hold AA meetings that differ from the common understanding of a group. These members simply gather at a set time and place for meeting, perhaps for convenience or other special situation. The main difference between a meeting and a group is that AA groups generally continue to exist outside the prescribed meeting hours, ready to provide 12-step help when needed. So what does that mean? There's an old trustee named Don P. I love his definition. Is that, for my example, and I'll just say this, I really don't care how your meeting closes. I don't care how it opens. I don't care what you read. And I really don't care what prayers you use. Totally your group's business. But for my example, I start with a group that opens with the Serenity Prayer and closes with the Lord's Prayer. That's my example. And Don used to always say, you can judge the quality of an AA meeting between what happens from the Serenity Prayer to the Lord's Prayer. But you judge the quality of an AA group by what happens between the Lord's Prayer and the Serenity Prayer. Like, what is your group doing between meetings to participate in Alcoholics Anonymous? Are you connected to the local intergroup or central office? Are you connected to general service? Are you doing any group members involved in any kind of 12-step activity like public information or treatment or corrections? Do you get together and celebrate each other's birthdays or anniversaries, whatever you call them? Do you fellowship together? Like, that's what makes an AA group. I want to read the section on specialized AA groups, because this is a common misunderstanding, but I'm going to read it. Some AAs come together as specialized AA groups for men, women, young people, doctors, gays, and others. If the members are all alcoholic, and if they open the door to all alcoholics who seek help, regardless of profession, gender, or other distinction, and meet all other aspects defining an AA group, they may call themselves an AA group. In other words, that's on page 12, last paragraph before, is there a difference between a meeting and a group? In other words, you can have the greatest women's meeting in the world, but if a man shows up at the door who's dying of alcoholism and needs a meeting and you don't let him in, you can call yourselves a lot of things, but not Alcoholics Anonymous. You can have the greatest men's meeting in the world. And we really don't have this problem. I'll call them out. Young people don't seem to have, I've never heard of this problem at a young people's meeting. I've never heard of this problem at a gay and lesbian meeting either. Never heard it. It's only men's and women's meetings where I hear about this problem. Now, I think, unfortunately, it involves practical common sense, which is not common, right? We can agree probably on that. Like, I've wanted to go to a women's meeting for a long time, right? I've wanted to be a fly on the wall, but they're not talking about me with my 33 years who wants to know what's going on at a women's meeting. We're talking about the person who's dying or the person who's out of town. And really, you know, people say, yo, you don't need a meeting. You only need the big book. And you find, yeah, well, that sounds good in a meeting, but not good when someone you love just passed away and you just flew 1,000 miles away and your heart is ripped out of your body and you can't deal with the grief. And the only thing you want is to maybe sit in an uncomfortable chair and have a bad cup of coffee and feel at home for an hour. The one thing I know about Alcoholics Anonymous is God has made the first meeting and hasn't missed one yet, you know? And so if that's going to help somebody, how do you turn that person away? but it's in the literature. People say, oh, Billy, it's not in the literature. It is in the literature. It says, how do you become an AA group member? It says the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Thus, group membership requires no formal application. I will say this. Some groups have you register with the secretary. Let me start a little controversy right away here. You have to read the literature. I was joking around that. I actually put a pin. Did I put one? There was a pin that said something up there about reading the literature. And I moved one here to remind me of it. Because when I walked in here before, I don't know if this happened to any other men. I saw the men's room. I saw the sign. I walked in, but was then blasted by some off-color version of pink, which shocked my brain and made me step outside the door to look at the sign. I was like, did I just walk into a women's room? Because I've been to many facilities, and I'm sure in today's day they don't use pink and blue paint, but I was raised, like, I walked right out of that bathroom. If anybody saw me, like, that was very unusual. I looked at the men's room sign. I went to the literature. I went to the literature on the wall. And the literature is critical. And the literature in the 12 and 12 is so taken out of context. I hate that we call the long form of the tradition the long form. Those are the traditions. We don't need to say they're the long form. They're the traditions. The short form is the short form created. Saying a desire to stop drinking is AA membership is like jacks are better to open up in a poker game. Okay. It's insanity. The last line in the 12 and 12 has been taken out of context because people say you're a member when you say you are. It's not what it says. It says any alcoholic is a member when they say they are. That's what it says. Any alcoholic. It's any alcoholic who has a desire to stop drinking is a member of AA, separate than going to a closed or open meeting. We have convoluted this. I don't know. I have my big book in front of me. I didn't know I had this problem before I came to AA, but I found out in AA. I have made up my own definitions of words my whole life. And it was a man in AA that introduced me to a dictionary. Like, we're going to go with what the rest of the world says this word means, not what you have decided in your own head. But it seems today we have convoluted that. Like, we're willing to use a dictionary for every word except alcoholism, alcohol, and drinking. I believe what Bill W. wrote in the original traditions essays. You and any newcomer deserve to sit as long as you want to figure out if you belong here. The patience falls on the old timer. It's kind of insanity to expect someone with 3 days to act like they have 3 years anyway. But I believe in the AA literature. I have also, after my service on the AA board, I served as a non-heroin addict member of another fellowship's board, like their version of a Class A. And it was very enlightening for me, very enlightening. I met many heroin addicts who were not alcoholic, many. Now, they don't drink in the same way I don't use drugs, because people who drink or drug, regardless whether they're an alcoholic or an addict, make bad decisions while they're drinking and drugging. I live in South Florida. The amount of people dying of heroin overdoses and fentanyl overdoses is astronomical. It's horrific, actually. And we have so many AA members who want to convince people that because they've had a spiritual experience as a result of the steps, they can help anybody. Now, I have sponsees who are both. I have sponsees of one or the other. But I'm not afraid to refer someone and take them to another 12-step fellowship. Like, my group doesn't need more members that I want someone in the wrong room. Like, I want their life saved the way mine was. Now, that doesn't mean, and I know the book says our other problems go away. That's true for a lot of us. If you're like me, slowly, sometimes too slowly, that your other problems go away. But I know what it's like. This is my real life experience in AA. I know what it's like to sit with someone who is 8 years sober, who asked me to meet him at a diner, to tell me that he just forged his wife's signature on a second mortgage application the night before because he is thousands of dollars in debt to a bookie and he can't stop gambling. Well, it's clear that while some of his other problems have gone away, gambling has not. And I had to tell him, hey, listen, like, if we're going to continue this relationship, like, you have to go to GA. You have to surrender to GA. So I'm not some, like, hellfire and brimstone saying throw people out of AA. And I'm not somebody who's saying if you're both might get better in AA. I know that to be the truth. I know tons of people who are both or have a couple of problems. But if you don't know the person is an alcoholic, we have to be very careful with the lives that we're dealing with, extremely careful. And I say that because it gets me to the chapter or the section on open and closed meetings. There's a definition for open and closed meetings on page 13. Closed meetings have two requirements. Each one has a separate set of requirements. But there's two groups of people who can go to closed meetings. AA members only, hence alcoholic, or those who have a drinking problem and a desire to stop drinking. Not just a desire to stop drinking. Somehow in our culture today, we have said, well, just tell them you have a desire to stop drinking. No, that's not what it says. It says a desire to stop drinking and a drinking problem. And then it says open meetings are available to anyone interested in Alcoholics Anonymous's program of recovery from alcoholism. Non-alcoholics may attend open meetings as observers. This goes back to the dictionary. Not my definition of observer for me. You know, I get invited to a meeting at work and I'm an observer. I think since I observe until I realize that you all don't know what you're talking about. And then I get to throw my two cents in, right? That's my definition of observing. That's not observing. Observing is non-alcoholics or somebody. That's it. You don't get to participate. Now, I'm not talking about special anniversary meetings where you might have an Al-Anon speaker. That's different. We're talking about day in, day out. But what's happened to open meetings? Open meetings have been defined in Alcoholics Anonymous as meetings of all addictions anonymous. That's what's happened. People think it's a place to let anyone share safely. Absolutely not. Actually, those people belong more in a closed meeting. If they have a desire to stop drinking and a drinking problem, but they're not an alcoholic, well, they belong perfectly in a closed meeting. Open meetings are our showcase to the world. Open meetings are where we want probation officers and judges and priests and rabbis and medical students. And I just spoke in an open meeting the other day, and I didn't know this, but at the university down by Abacoa, the University of Florida campus there, there's a physician's assistance program. And there were two students who were physician's assistants. And they came up to the chairperson at the start, and I happened to be speaking that day. And, you know, after the meeting, I talked to them and thanked them for being there. But open meetings are where AA is on display for the world. That's where the message has to be clearly an AA message. Now, it goes into what types of meetings AA meetings hold, and I don't think I need to explain that too clearly, but what I do want to explain is this. There's one person you cannot blame when you go to a meeting with a bad speaker, and that is the speaker. It's not their fault. They did not ask themselves to speak. That is some other AA member. You ever been in a meeting where you hear someone say, well, you know, I've never heard his story, but I thought today would be a good time to hear it. Well, that's not a good plan for an AA meeting. That's not a good place to hear their story for the first time. You know, there's an immense responsibility on chair people to pick a speaker that has an AA message. There's a thing here about suggested meeting procedures. What I'm going to tell you is no meeting does it the same. But you might want to have some basic guidelines that you agree on before you argue at a business meeting. Some groups like two-thirds voting. Some groups like majority voting. Well, it's not a good time to decide in that moment. Decide that at some other business meeting. Some groups have sobriety requirements and different sobriety requirements for different positions. Yeah, it's good to have those, all those procedures agreed to by your group. And then, of course, it says the AA home group. Traditionally, most AA members through the years have found it important to belong to one group that they call their home group. This is the group where they accept service responsibilities and try to sustain friendships. So, except you ever, you know, you go on Zoom sometimes, the same person is chairing 24 hours a day. It's like if you watch the news and the news people went from channel to channel and you like turn from channel to channel and the same person is on the other channel. It's not the way it's supposed to be. Your first commitment for service is to your home group. Now, if you go to a meeting that's not a group but need someone to do service, that's okay. But it's definitely not okay to tell your sponsees to get a service commitment at every group they go to. You know, it says support the seventh tradition. You know, I want to talk about this before I end because I think it's super, super important. Is, you know, it's so funny that someone was raised where I was raised. And, you know, there's a lot of people you can say to that come from certain towns that have the most bars in the world, but there's very few that come from the real one. It's just true. Like, I don't have to lie. I know what the book said back then, you know? I know what the book list said and everything else, you know? I happen to be raised in this blue-collar town in the middle of a white-collar side of Long Island that had, at the time, the largest mental facility in the country. And it had 20,000 patients inpatient and 80 different buildings, and everybody's mom and dad worked there, and there were so many first- and second-generation Irish, and the town was a disaster, but a good place to grow up. I'm just being honest. And, you know, when my mom and dad were first generation born here, you can't buy a book on how to raise a healthy family by my mom and dad. And I don't hold that against them. They did the best with what they had. My dad was a deep cover narcotics agent. My mom, most of my childhood, was an untreated Al-Anon, untreated codependent. It was very popular in the 80s when the John Bradshaw days and inner child and dysfunctional families. But if I told you that my mom was a stay-at-home mom and my dad was an out-of-control violent alcoholic, that's just a perfectly ordinary household where I come from. And everybody worked at the state hospital or were in Local 3 in the city or a pipe fitter or a plumber or a fireman, or drove the trains, or it's just where I come from. And, but my parents learned something growing up. I don't know where they learned it. They somehow learned that when you go to somebody's house for the first time, especially, you always bring something. I don't know who taught them that. They didn't know anything else. Somebody taught them that. For my dad, that meant you brought like a bottle of Jameson's whiskey. Or if you were my mom, or a case of beer. If you were my mom, you brought an Entenmann's cake. Because that's what we can afford, you know? My mom even went to the Entenmann's thrift store with the expired dates on the stickers, you know? But she went, and she was important that you bring something. And listen, I live like an hour and 15 south of here. If you came to my house and you brought a cake or flowers or Topo Chico salsa water, I would say, thank you. It's very nice. But I would not give you 1/30th of my mortgage bill. And I would not tell you have to chip in for the lights. And while you may volunteer to do some dishes, it's my responsibility to clean the house. It's my house. My responsibility. You're a guest. When I go to another meeting and they pass a basket, I'm not telling anyone here not to put money in an AA basket in front of you. If I put a dollar in another basket or whatever I happen to put in, it's no different than my mom putting an Entenmann's cake in the basket. It's because I've been taught how to be a respectful guest. That's it. But the long form of the seventh tradition puts an immense responsibility on home group members. It says the AA groups themselves should be fully self-supporting by the voluntary contributions of their, T-H-E-I-R, own members. You hear a group that needs support, that might be a group that needs to end, I hate to say it. But our groups are supposed to be self-supporting by our own members. You know what I tell people all the time? And if people come to me and say, you know, Billy, how do I make sure I'm giving my group enough money? And I just say, listen, continue to what you normally do. But every day track any money you put in an AA basket for a month, 1 month, that's it. And at the end of that month, add up the total and add up how much money went in your home group's basket. And if your home group is getting like 10 or 20% of your monthly AA contribution, shame on you. Like, it's your responsibility per the seventh tradition. Like, you want to make sure that 75% of your basket contributions are going to your home group. That's your number one responsibility. That's what the tradition says. And we have so many groups that are struggling because we all of a sudden became a throw $1, a throw $2. And I am not a person. If you have no money to throw in, I welcome you as much as if you have money. I do want to talk about rotation quickly by just saying that there's a spiritual rule. You can't fill a filled position. You can say, oh, no one else will take it. That's why I did it 7 years. Well, don't take it. If the position's that important, so I'll tell you what. If you're standing out in the parking lot for the second week in a row because nobody wanted to be the person who opens up the facility, someone's going to open up. If you've gone 3 weeks in a row without coffee because the person who did it for 6 years is no longer doing it, yeah, someone's going to step up. But as long as someone is willing to keep doing it, no one's going to step up. And rotation is important because of what the big book talks about, the alcoholic ego, the enemy of the alcoholic ego, that I can do it all, you need me. Nope, AA doesn't need me. It doesn't need any of us. AA needs us. Group inventories are super important. There's a good section in here. Regularly do them. It's super important. I'll touch on this before I end. How much money your group contributes is an important decision for every home group. A super important decision. And don't do just because somebody says, you know, in tradition 4 in the 12 and 12, it talks about rule 62. Don't take yourself so seriously, right? But we have rule 63 in AA. Especially in AA service, this is the way we've always done it. No, I'd much rather break a little china, find a little new way to do it that's better and actually works. Don't have anyone tell you that you have to give 10% here and 50% here and 30% here and 10% here. Your group should contribute excess funds to other AA entities, because money causes trouble for groups. Too much money, too many problems. There's no doubt about that. But you need to know what's the financial status of your local home group or your local intergroup. What's the status of your local area? What's the status of your local district? I will say this, even though it's very unpopular for me to say, your group knows where to spend its money. And I want to stress that. Your group knows how to spend your money the best. You don't need people below the triangle telling you how to spend your money. I know what it's like to come to South Florida as a visiting trustee and have Area 15 give me a $30,000 check to bring back to New York. It was in my wallet. I remember I went to whatever board weekend, like a couple of weeks later, and I saw the CFO for the General Service Office. I said, "Oh, I got something for you." And I pulled out my money clip, and I had this check that I had folded over a couple of times. That's $30,000 of AA group money that Area 15 decided they didn't need and sent it to the General Service Office, the General Service Board particularly. Money that the groups gave Area 15 to do service locally. I don't know where that culture started. I don't know where this culture started of, like, we're going to, like, have a district fund to pay for GSRs whose groups can't pay for them. That means the group's not self-supporting. Like, all of that needs to be looked at closely by the group. Like, I only want to send my group money for being used to help new alcoholics. Remember, and that's the last thing I'll close with. The purpose of the service structure is not to write new guidelines, write new rules, make things difficult. I was a delegate in 1999. The delegate now, I do not want to be this delegate the same way I was. I hope the General Service Board, who's meeting this weekend, is smarter and better than I was. And I hope they found out better ways to do certain things. Our message is the one I want to make sure doesn't change. How we carry our message, we should be changing. And finding new ways. But I want to know, does Palm Beach Inner Group need money? Does my district need money? Our money is getting into correctional facilities. If your assembly still starts on Friday night and you do this at 8 o'clock and this at 9 o'clock and this on Saturday and this on Sunday, same with a district meeting, same with a inner group, like, are we keeping up and spending our money the way we should to properly serve people? That's it. Thank you.